studio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Andy Woo looks a scream. Add him on my woo. Andy Woo, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
Hi, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is guest host Kristen Derryberry on today's episode of Art Focus. We are going to be talking with Iris and Tiffany, the collaborative team behind the gallery Holding Contemporary. The current show, If a Tree Falls, is up now on both Instagram and you can walk by in person downtown. Well, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on and talking with us during strange times.
Yes, of course. Thanks for having us.
I do know that you guys have a very unconventional way of organizing and financially keeping the gallery in place with shareholders. And I just really would like for to take some time to talk about that for a little bit, and then we can talk about how that led to the show now, too.
Yeah. So the gallery started actually originally as Williamson Knight. We started it in early 2017. I had been working previously for a gallery called Hap Gallery in the same space. And then my partner at the time, John Knight, had been working for, he was at Cherry and Lucic, had a space. Actually like gifted this space in downtown or in the Pearl, kind of across from a lot of the other great galleries in town. But I've done spaces in other parts of the country and kind of know that it can be a really quick burnout. I'm an arts worker and started out as an artist, and so I don't really have the resources that it typically takes to essentially start a new gallery. But the space was part of like a condo building, so we were actually given the space at very low rent. The previous owner of the gallery had owns it, so she is able to give us like a deal that we couldn't have made happen. So that's kind of the way it started. But because we've done these kinds of projects, we're like, oh, this is it's still going to cost a lot of money. Like there's still shipping, there's still insurance, there's still all these other things. And I still have to work a full-time job. Like this is not something that pays me and didn't pay John at the time and doesn't pay Tiffany now as the new business partner. So kind of really still risky to take. And we wanted to show work that we felt was challenging or different or kind of like did a different thing in the neighborhood. We spent a lot of time kind of preparing and thinking about this ahead of time and knowing that like we don't have the money to kind of start a gallery. Typically you need some kind of seed money for that to kind of carry the gallery for the first several years. And then we've also worked for nonprofits and it's such a struggle. Like there's so many great nonprofits that different ways and to put our hat in that ring was not something of interest. Because really a gallery is just like a glorified retail. Thinking about different kinds of other business. There's like mom and pop shops. And then we're on the West Coast, there's tons of startups. And then there's the large corporations. And there's different models and ways of organizing business through these different kinds of models. And so I took a few cues from these different types of businesses. One thing that I took from was kind of the idea of shareholders. Because of the nature of galleries, it doesn't make sense to go get a loan from a bank or to go get an investment from a venture capitalist, because art doesn't really sell in Portland. It's very difficult and there's not a ton of collectors. And we just didn't have an expectation that even work that was modestly priced was going to fly off the shelves. And that's fine. Like, that's not really, like, one of the beautiful things about galleries is that you get to see work. You can just go in for free and you can just appreciate what's there. To be able to think about work that doesn't have to be necessarily saleable. And thus it allowed us to actually show maybe more challenging work, more interesting work, things that might not be so easy to put into a gallery setting. We're thinking about how corporations, there's many people who contribute towards the startup cost as, you know, quote unquote, owners or shareholders. But, you know, the concept of the idea of being able to share the value of a gallery, like, that's what we're really wealthy in, is that we have a great community of people. And they're not all the richest people. They're like fellow artists or professors or people who just have an appreciation and a love for art. Those are the people that we felt very wealthy in relationships. And what if we allow for like small investments or like purchasing a share for $100, and then we're able to actually give benefits back? A shareholder could purchase a share of the gallery. There's 300 shares available total from when we started, and they cost $100 each. And there's a percentage of dividends that shareholders get based on sales. So if we do really well, the check that they get back is higher. And if we do poorly, then they might get a check for like 3 cents. There's kind of this like, you're getting something back and you're kind of constantly feeling like you're part of the gallery. You also get transparency, you get to see our financial statements. And we also get to like put forward the artists in a unique way where we get to really like focus and be like, these are the artists that you're supporting us. So, and in turn, we're able to support them. And so that's something that we get to share a lot. We also have like special events and parties and things like that. All these systems, like, we're able to offer value. Like, I don't know if we'll ever be able to pay our investors back entirely. It depends on how long we last and how well we do. But in the meantime, people are getting these feelings of belonging and these ability to kind of help us in our path. That's kind of how this shareholder program works. And we've been around 3 years. The first year and a half was with John Knight. He ended up moving to Montana. So we shifted the gallery and changed the name at that time. And the shareholders actually voted on the name Holding, with Tiffany joining on. And so I'm so thankful for both partners for, you know, bringing such different things and such special things to the gallery. And so here we are.
Iris and I met through one of the gallery artists, Drew Donovan. So while the gallery was still Williamson Knight, I met Iris and John, and Iris and I also worked together for Converge 45. So we knew that we had these similar interests, and I was super interested in what they were doing and this different kind of model that I hadn't seen before. So I came on board like exactly a year ago.
Wow, that's exciting. I would like to kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about the concepts behind If a Tree Falls. Now that we have the shareholders kind of background, because I know a lot of them ended up in the show too. And so I just would like for you guys to talk about that.
So the current show, If a Tree Falls, was a reaction to what was happening, like to the pandemic, and something else scheduled that we needed to rethink. So when COVID-19 was starting to emerge, we just had an exhibition opening basically for another show. And that we're really sad because not that many people came. I think the opening did get a couple great like reviews and things like that, but we didn't know if we were going to merely extend Aaron Murray and Leslie Hickey's show or do something different. So after a lot of conversation, Iris and I decided that it made sense to put the artists that have shown with Williamson Knight and Holding Contemporary like up to the present day and highlight these artists and make sure that the artists got a higher percentage of any sales. So the exhibition was being formed by an idea that wasn't going to force this kind of curatorial lens on it. It was just like, we're still here. We want to support the artists, and we're going to put a spotlight on all of these incredible artists, and know that the show is going to be online and just seen through the gallery windows. Maybe one artwork from each artist who wanted to participate that would show the type of work that they do that would be indicative of like their practice and things like that. So If a Tree Falls was just the tongue in cheek, like, we don't know if anyone's going to see it. And is this, you know, we're so confused by it, like everyone else, about what was happening. But yeah, it was different than the way that we curate any other show. It was kind of just like, how can we put the artist at the forefront, and just the connective thread just being this time that we're going through.
Yeah, that is very exciting, the way that you kind of stepped back from a traditional way of curating and just, like you said, shine a light on the artists. I would like to talk about some of the pieces in the show, and then we can talk about the happy hours. Those are fun too. Mm-hmm. First piece I would like to talk about is Andre Filipek's piece. I was fortunate enough to know him personally. We went to undergrad together at PNCA. I just would like for, if you have any insight on that piece.
Yeah.
If I remember what it's made out of, was it 3D printed? It almost translates as like a ceramic online. It is wild.
Right. Not just online, but in real life, it translates as ceramic. So Andre Filipek Manangia is a artist. He's based in New York right now. He did live in Portland for a little while. His work is a lot about his Mexican history and objects and value. And so he works from some historical objects that are historical Mexican objects, and then some that are a little bit more contemporary. So in the series, that piece, which was actually part of an exhibition that we did, so most of the works that are in the show are actually from previous exhibitions. That piece is kind of like, it's half of a, the image is a 3D printed half of a water tank that is kind of a brand that is in Mexico. He kind of has this water tank and then has it cut in half, and the inside of it is lined with like a pastry. And so you can kind of see these shapes of these pastries that are all around. Then he, with that series, he has this kind of flocking process. So it kind of gives it this like really soft texture. Maybe the flocking is like something that would be like on the dashboard of a car or something like that. The materials are so unusual because they feel as like heavy pieces, but they're extremely light, and they're essentially kind of playing with these ideas of value. And why do we value certain objects? So there's lots of like objects that you can go travel to Mexico and be like, okay, here's a real life Mexican creating something of their history. Why is this valued maybe less or more than historical objects that are found in burial area or something like that? Like thinking about how we think about objects, which is such a common theme about art. Why do we value a certain object on the wall as an art piece versus something that's more useful for utility? He's doing this not only with the objects that he's using in the work, but also with the way that it's perceived. It's perceived as something that's like of a high value, that's something that's heavy and weighty, and that should be on a pedestal in the museum because it looks like ceramic, it looks like it's made of stone or clay or all this, but it's a 3D printed object. And that kind of really changes how you think of an object. That's a lot of the issues that Andre's thinking about. And so we were able to bring one of those pieces back from that series.
Hi, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is guest host Kristen Derryberry on today's episode of Art Focus. We're talking with Iris Sintouf from Gallery Holding Contemporary. The current show, If a Tree Falls, is up now on both Instagram and in person until the end of the month.
I just want to jump in real quick and just...
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Just thank you for asking about the specific works and things. And these artists are just so incredibly diverse and different. You know, each practice is completely different. And the other component that went kind of hand in hand with the exhibition was the creation of the Holding Happy Hours that then became this like, had this whole life unto itself that was really exciting. And that was something that I know that you attended our first one, which was really great to see your face there. But that was also something that was intended to involve the artist, and our inaugural one was Iris and I hosting. And then since that time, we've had artist-led conversations and performances and studio visits and guided meditations and things like that. But go to the website and see all the artists that are involved in the exhibition, and also just noting that the holding happy hours are continuing, and it's been this like really cool experiment, I think.
If anyone is interested, they can just visit Holding Contemporary on Instagram, and they happen on Thursdays at 5, and the link is on their bio. On the Instagram.
Yes.
And it was so much fun going on the first one. I kind of did feel like I was in a gallery.
Did you?
Like just hanging out with a beverage of choice and being able to talk to people. I'm very excited about seeing some art too coming up on the future ones.
Yeah.
And the ones that have happened. But I do want to talk about how did yesterday's happy hour go and what was involved with yesterday's happy hour.
Iris can talk about it.
So we had a show with Shada Soleimani. Shada is one of our very first artists we've shown. Shada is a professor and artist, an Iranian American artist based in Providence, Rhode Island. And she does a lot of work that's actually pretty difficult in nature. Like about different kinds of injustices, specifically issues around the Middle East and about power and governments. It was really interesting to kind of catch back up with Shada and see about the projects that she's been working on lately. A lot of that has to do with different power struggles, and some of it even has to do with like the way that different governments are dealing with coronavirus. So we'll see what actually comes out of her new work. It's pretty exciting to kind of get a behind the scenes studio visit with what she has been working on and the topics around that. So we were able to talk with Shada at her studio in Providence. And she also is kind of like a certified bird rescuer or healer, or I forget the exact term for it. And sorry, Shada, for botching that. But she gave us kind of a tour of her birds and the different stories about birds that were kind of in her care now. And, you know, birds that had been in her care in the past, and also some fun bird facts. So totally different, like kind of a definitely like an art centric conversation, but then totally kind of like brought into other areas of life where we're thinking about animals and care and these other topics. So that's kind of one of the fun things about what the happy hours have been doing so far, is that each artist brings such a different perspective and a different format for it.
Oh, that's so exciting. And that's what art's supposed to be doing. It's supposed to like not only bring people together, but invite these other conversations that are deep, but also about birds and animals and taking care of them. To look at Michael Lazarus' piece first. If you guys want to talk about his painting, it's acrylic and latex on canvas. Whatever you know about his process, the painting is very minimal. It's white canvas with some painting, and it looks very layered too, the way it translates. I've seen some of his work in person too, and he does have an aesthetic, but I feel like it balances between minimalism and maximalism, and that's really interesting to me. So,
well, let's see. His paintings are incredibly complex and layered. And Iris introduced me to Michael's work, and we just had an exhibition with him last year. And he puts these symbols like faces in all of his works, but formally they're just incredibly layered and smudged and erased and then reworked. And for me, as that introduction to seeing his work initially, it was just, I was so impressed by seeing them in person in his studio. And I think, you know, Iris worked at the gallery at PNCA, and I think she knew Michael from there, but maybe she can correct that.
Oh, I know Michael from Work Sound days. There was an artist-run space in town run by Modu Dieng, and we would go.
That is a throwback. Work Sound is long time ago.
Yeah, I love Work Sound. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I know Michael and Christine from then, and but Michael's work, I mean, he has been showing around in Portland for several years now, and he was in New York before this, and as a painter is, you know, amazingly beautiful painter, highly skilled, just love spending time in the details of his work. You can see the gestural marks and the things that, you know, might be overlooked when you're looking at something quickly, but there's such depth and beauty in Michael's work. And he also, you know, he has these, alluding to like the simplicity of it, like there's a lot of maybe it would be negative space or this kind of isolated subject within a broad background. And he also has these faces, which essentially like you kind of look back at them. And so some of them seem very like ephemeral and welcoming, and some of them have like harsher faces or things that maybe evoke different emotions. But a lot of that is kind of having the painting look back at you, and also kind of this maybe spiritual or maybe like psychological self or reflection back. And so Michael's really interested in these kinds of ideas about like viewership and self-reflection. And we really love kind of the added depth that it takes just with spending time with the work, which goes back to why it's actually really difficult to exhibit work during this time, because it is so hard to see work in real life. And the photographs that you see online, it's just, you know, it doesn't compare. But, you know, how lucky we are. I feel like that this is just a moment to realize like when things can and do open back up again, how thankful I feel to be able to like experience different objects or new objects in a way where there's some kind of connection that happens or something is shared in those moments. And then even beyond that, when you're actually sharing moments of gathering, like the opening that we were talking about, like to be able to gather with people, it's like what we would do to just be able to like have another opening. That would be so amazing.
Yeah. Lastly, I would like to talk about Tabitha's piece too, because I feel like that piece is functioning very uniquely right now. Mm-hmm. Because it looks like a painted box, and then you scroll through and then you see, you guys did so well of documenting this as well as you can. You open it up and then there's like, so the painted box has a bunny, and then you open up and there's a toy bunny. And then you realize that it comes with a USB drive. Is that right?
Yeah, the bunny is the USB drive.
Yeah, right. If you guys, I love Tabitha. They are amazing human and wonderful to work with. You guys can talk about that piece. And yeah, so that's the piece I'm excited about too.
That piece is from a project that Tabby was working on a lot last year. We actually featured that piece projected, and then, or not projected, but on screens, and then with a backdrop, a painted backdrop, in an exhibition that we did in New York last year. And so this is actually kind of just a small USB that contains the video that was made. It's meant to be kind of an interactive, it's a video, like a video game. And so there are different actors and players in the work. But a lot of it is kind of based on Watership Down. Right. And so a lot of these like kind of bunnies of like fighting against certain challenges and finding a way of creating home and creating like a place for themselves in it. And so those kind of themes are built upon throughout the video game, and then the accompanying soundtrack and different documentation. Part of the visual references for the work was from Tabby's hometown mall in like Utah. And so there's all these old school like imagery of like mall scenes from like the 80s, 90s, that kind of aesthetic. So there's all these kind of factors that are part of that series. And so this small edition, it's an edition of five, and we have a few available, but it's a painted piece with these different rabbit characters. Each one has a different tool. And then a USB drive that has video game and the soundtrack and all these different elements in it.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to see their show in New York last year as well, and got to play with their video games, and they're so much fun. They're mm-hmm. so much fun to just like walk around in like a desolate mall. It's totally like from the 90s too, so it's like this meta throwback that's yeah. really nice with their video games. It's and yeah, it's just desolate, and you walk there and you're like, is there any point to this? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the point, is that there is no point to the walking around. It's just really mundane. You're like, I'm going in circles.
Right, so. With this incredible soundtrack and,
yeah.
And the installation too. I mean, there's this hand painted when we had the pop up holding pop up in New York in September. This piece was featured in the windows, and with these hand painted like draperies that were coming down, that was kind of flanked the video screen. So there were so many elements to it, so many parts of like what is in the physical and what is in the virtual realm. And yeah, Tabby's work is so rich in that way.
So yeah, well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
I will be going to a happy hour next week.
Yay. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Look forward to seeing you then.
Yeah. And hopefully other listeners out there will be coming too.
Yes. Please join us.
This is Art Focus. My name's Joseph Galavan. I'm here on your community-supported radio station, KBOO Portland, where we are one of the few shows talking about visual art in Portland. Thanks for listening today, and I want to remind everyone that if you can donate today at kboo.fm/give, please do so. We've had to cancel our usual spring membership drive, so we hope you'll show your support by giving online. We know times are tough, so if you're not able to donate, don't worry. But if you can, please show your support for this free community resource. kboo.fm. Thanks very much.
Like to take a cement fix, be a standing cinema. Dress my friends up just for show, see them as they really are. Put the people in my brain, two new pens to have a go. I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy walking, Andy tired, Andy take a little snooze. Tie him up when he fast asleep, send him on a pleasant cruise. When you wake up on the sea, be sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue, what a jolly boring thing to do.
such a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
La programación de KBOO es posible gracias a sus oyentes miembros de KBOO y el apoyo de el Consorcio Regional de Proveedores de Agua, quien les recuerda que durante este momento difícil, el agua del grifo sigue siendo una opción segura y saludable. Puede encontrar